Hello, this is Byron Richards, and you are tuned into my weekly Wellness Update podcast, bringing you the health news that you can use. Well, this week, of course, all this month, Wellness Resources has been having its special going on relating to female and male products. And I noticed as I was looking over different things that I hadn't written anything about indole-3-carbinol or diindolemethane for years. It's kind of interesting. I mean, I had written, you know, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, an article on indole-3-carbinol, which is I3C for short, and diindolemethane, which is DIM for short. These, of course, are compounds that come from cruciferous vegetables, such as broccoli and cauliflower. So, you know, when you cut them open and start chewing on them, the enzyme that starts to release the indole-3-carbinol is activated. Diindolemethane forms from 2-indole-3-carbinol molecules. Very interesting compounds. At any rate, once upon a long time ago, when I used to be able to write all kinds of stuff and plaster it right next to my products, I had a very extensive article on this, probably at least 100 references in it. And that was before the FDA. So I noticed I hadn't even reissued or issued it in a proper format, which is just as a report on supplement ingredients, which I have now done. But I spent a lot of time putting this together, updating it, bringing you all up to date on these two nutrients because they are extremely powerful regulators of health and have developed quite a body of science relating to breast and prostate cancer prevention, as well as good for treatment as part of what somebody might be doing. But you know, this whole thing about cruciferous vegetables and cancer has been going on for some time. There's some epidemiological information, you know, when people have consumed more or higher amounts of cruciferous vegetables. There's data that shows that this can help reduce breast cancer as well as prostate cancer. And I review that in this article. But that's not always true. You know, and in terms of, it's not clear cut. There are some studies showing that. There are others that don't show that. And you know, a lot of times when you do large dietary studies, there's, you know, it's hard to say what's, you know, the components of the diet might be doing this, that, or the other. But in general, the cruciferous vegetables in your diet have, positive effects. There are some things, you should know about them in terms of eating them. When you boil them in water, of course, you leach out into the water a lot of the active components that will relate to the I3C and the potential formation of DIM, so that's not a good way to eat them. You can even have a loss of the enzymatic reaction that produces them from steaming them. So, you know, I like lightly sautéing or raw, because those would be the best ways to maintain the activity of that. When you consume a serving of these cruciferous vegetables, you get about anywhere from 15 up to 50 milligrams of I3C in a serving, which isn't a bad amount at all. I mean, we use supplements with up to 200 milligrams per so you get a lot more in dietary supplements than you can eating the food, but there's nothing wrong with eating the food. In fact, it's a good idea to have it, the cruciferous vegetables as part of a healthy diet of vegetables that you would be consuming. Now, I want to start by explaining the earlier research on this, which is what got them got all the buzz going about I3C and DIM. And it has to do with how it influences estrogen metabolism. And essentially, what researchers have been able to discover, of course, is that estradiol, which is the stronger form of estrogen that a woman makes during her menstrual cycle so as to cause proliferation of tissue on the endometrial lining and create the environment necessary to potentially have a child. So estradiol is a proliferative form of estrogen, It's proliferative on purpose for the purpose of having kids. So it has to do that. If it didn't do that, pregnancy wouldn't be possible. So there are, of course, estrogen receptors in breast tissue. And if the estradiol level is high, or depending on how it is metabolized, it can either be what we call going down a certain metabolic pathway. One of them is called 16-alpha-hydroxyestrone. We'll just call it the 16 pathway for the purpose of this talk. And the other is called the 2-hydroxyestrone pathway, and I'll just call that the 2 pathway. So we have the 16 pathway, which is normal, and the 2 pathway, which is normal. And typically, in a healthy situation, these are in balance with each other. When the 16 pathway gets overblown, you might say, or when more estrogen tends to flow down it, then it can stimulate the growth of breast cancer. So instead of having proliferation in the uterus relating to pregnancy potential, we get inappropriate estrogenic stimulation from the estradiol being metabolized down this number 16 pathway. So if a person has enough of the number two pathway, then it's in balance with the 16. So we kind of call the number two pathway the good pathway because it actually offers protection against breast cancer. We know that women with breast cancer have higher levels of the 16 metabolite, and the ratio between the 16 and the 2 metabolite is out of balance, meaning there's more of the 16 and less of the 2. So they have higher levels and they have depressed levels of the 2. And this is widely regarded and acknowledged as being a primary indicator of breast cancer risk. This has also been demonstrated in postmenopausal women. So even though we're not necessarily running menstrual cycles anymore, if this imbalanced estrogenic metabolism is still occurring, even after transition, which is common, then breast cancer risk elevates. So researchers demonstrated that women who took 300 to 400 milligrams of indole-3-carbinol, I3C, per day significantly changed the ratio of estrogen metabolism, reducing the 16 pathway and boosting up the 2 pathway. A dose of 200 milligrams or less was not effective at correcting this problem, although you could argue that if a person didn't have a bad problem, a lower dose, as found in a typical servings of cruciferous vegetables, may be enough. But it also tells you that this may be why the cruciferous vegetables dietary studies don't always show results, is because a lot of women wouldn't be consuming, you know, a couple of pounds of broccoli every day as part of their normal diet. And once you have this estrogenic problem imbalanced, then 300 to 400 milligrams of I3C per day are required to correct it. The only really way you're going to get that is from a dietary supplement. All right. So there's numerous studies showing that indole-3-carbinol and diindolemethane impact this estrogen metabolic pathway. Now, not all women, of course, have this imbalance. You can predict it because of other estradiol surplus problems. This would be, you know, high estrogenic menstrual cycles, heavier blood flow, cramps, headaches, cyst formation, endometriosis. You know, that kind of thing predicts that this is going on. And a postmenopausal woman who has a history of this probably still has the problem in a lot of cases. And, of course, if you had a family history or something of breast cancer, you'd be in this risk category. So there's certain women that would need to pay more attention to this than others. But if you're in this category, then a couple capsules a day of a product with indole-3-carbinol in it or diindolemethane will help correct the imbalanced metabolism and offer significant protection. A lot of data shows that this also helps prevent a recurrence of breast cancer. So somebody who's had breast cancer, this would be part of a good strategy to help prevent a recurrence. And, of course, this can be used during cancer treatments. The researchers have found that it's not just this estrogen pathway that these compounds influence. Researchers at the University of California have injected indole-3-carbinol directly into cancer cells where it blocks their replication directly. And the same researchers compared it to tamoxifen, which, of course, has a lot of undesirable side effects, makes insulin resistance worse, which can't possibly help metabolic influences that could cause breast cancer. So you're looking for things that bind to estrogen receptors or work similarly. At any rate, these researchers injected a group of human breast cancer cells with indole-3-carbinol, then with tamoxifen, and then with both. The cells injected with tamoxifen had a 60% inhibition of synthesis of the DNA of the cancer. The indole-3-carbinol cells had a 90% inhibition and a 95% inhibition when combined. Anyway, there's a lot of studies going on this up to this day, and they continue to show that indole-3-carbinol and diindolemethane are potent nutrients for female health, not only for breast cancer, but also for cervical cancer, especially related to the human papillomavirus, HPV, very, very effective at protecting the female system. So a lot of good things for that. And, of course, you know, it's an interesting thing, you might say, but HPV-related throat cancer is drastically on the rise in men. And this has been tracked to multiple sexual partners and that kind of thing. But my point being that a man can contract HPV via oral sex and can then have this problem in his throat and lead to throat cancer. More common in smokers, more common in men with multiple sexual partners, that kind of thing. But nevertheless, you know, it's an issue. And so some men may benefit orally from taking this HPV to protect their – no studies on that. I'm just drawing a correlate between the extreme protection given to women in terms of preventing HPV-related cancer from these compounds. So, you know, it's being studied by a lot. The MD Anderson Cancer Center's done a significant, you know, review of it. They're, of course – mainstream as you can get, and yet they do research on nutraceuticals because they realize their importance, and they've said that numerous studies have indicated that I3C has a strong liver protective activity against very carcinogens. Initial trials in women have shown that I3C is a promising agent against breast and cervical cancers. That's straight out of the MD Anderson Cancer Center's mouth. They don't say anything like that ever unless they have detailed gene-related science to back it up. They won't even venture to go there unless they are impressed. So that's kind of a where we're at. Of course, more research always needs to be done on everything. But for women, I3C and DIM offer extreme protection. There is also data showing about breast cancer or prostate cancer, excuse me. Researchers at Berkeley have proved, the same research group has actually demonstrated that I3C kills prostate cancer, and it will directly interact with the prostate cancer cells and kill them, just like it does with breast cancer cells. By the way, these nutrients leave healthy cells alone. They don't induce death in them. This is one of the hallmarks of nutritional supplements compared to drugs. Many of them, whether it's quercetin or tocotrienol E or green tea or curcumin, they can tell the difference between cancer cells and healthy cells where about, and they go about inducing death in cancer cells and helping the survival of healthy cells. At any rate, the researchers have proved that indole-3-carbinol directly interacts with the androgen receptor, which goes out of whack in prostate cancer. So it has a bunch of different ways it does this. And, you know, the Wayne State University School of Medicine, a lot of research being done there on indole-3-carbinol, diindolemethane, and prostate cancer. These researchers have concluded in one of their more recent studies that the results from our laboratory and from others provide ample evidence for the benefit of indole-3-carbinol and diindolemethane for the prevention and the treatment of prostate cancer. So these compounds, which have been around for in this nutritional sense for maybe 15 years now, they are really moving into the front and center for reproductive health of both sexes and offer extreme protection. So if you have concerns, if you're just not sure, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that actually have prostate cancer, don't even know it, and then there's others who do know it. They have slow-growing kinds, and they're not really, you know, even that problematic per se. But, you know, so the doctors are just watching and waiting and watching and waiting. Well, why don't you do something effective while you're watching and waiting, you know, if you have a problem? You know, it's well known that these compounds will lower prostate-specific antigen, which is not always predictive of prostate cancer, but is predictive of prostate inflammation that is often occurring when cancer is occurring. You don't want to see your PSA going up. It's not a good sign. Even if it's in the normal range and trending up over time, it's not a good sign. So, because you just don't know. But with these kind of compounds, you can lower it. And then there's a whole new interesting thing going on with indole-3-carbinol and diindolemethane and the relationship of obesity and white adipose tissue in conjunction with cancer. And there's some preliminary studies. These are mostly animal studies, but they're showing that the indole-3-carbinol directly interacts with white adipose tissue. It boosts adiponectin, which gets rid of insulin resistance and lowers your triglycerides. And it helps prevent weight gain. So the mechanism is there in animal studies that this would help with weight loss. But it also helps lower, when you correct insulin signaling, one of the things that make both breast and prostate cancer grow is that there's a confusion in insulin signaling and insulin-like growth factor 1, which is growth hormone. So historically, I mean, insulin and growth hormone are two of the oldest structures that date back in terms of evolution, in terms of being retained as structures. And they're very, very similar to each other, even though we give them different names. So, and sometimes we kind of give them similar names. So insulin is, you know, to transport blood sugar. And insulin-like growth factor 1, IGF-1, is actually the biologically active growth hormone signal. They look almost identical. And when your body develops insulin resistance, it tends to develop growth hormone resistance. And then instead of hormones doing friendly things, they start to do unfriendly things. So one of the cofactors of breast or prostate cancer, actually a lot of cancers, is that the cancer hijacks insulin-like growth factor 1, which is growth hormone, to help itself grow. It does this best when the hormonal environment is confused, i.e. there is also coexisting insulin resistance. So when you lower insulin resistance, you actually improve the functionality of insulin-like growth factor 1. This is a big deal. It is why part of the reasons why being overweight is associated with the most aggressive forms of breast and prostate cancer. So here, you know, we have this interesting nutrient that is now going into the adipose tissue metabolism realm, where it seems to create an environment that is less favorable to cancer growth in terms of hormonal confusion relating to growth hormone. That is also very good news. That's all preliminary data, but I lay out all the science in my article, and that'll be obviously researched much more intently over the coming decade. But, you know, right now the state of the science on indole-3-carbinol and diindolemethane is that it is extremely protective to male and female health and something that you should consider using if you are having problems or if you're concerned about risk factors in these areas. Okay, now my other feature-length article in this past week, I only have two news articles I'm reporting on this time because I wrote two feature-length articles. These feature-length articles take me a very long time to write, so I hope you read them. I like to write things in depth. I like to put all the references in there so that you can go check it out for yourself if you, for some reason, don't believe what I'm telling you. You know, but I've never really written an article on male sexual performance, so I thought I would do that this month as well. I whenever I'm watching television, especially a sports show or something, I mean, how many commercials for Cialis, Viagra, Levitra, or some even dietary supplements that are supposed to help men? Men perform better. And then, of course, we got the testosterone commercials now. And if you're tired, of course, you must have low testosterone. And I'm always amused, you know, because the drug companies have to give their disclaimers on these drugs or the list of side effects. And they're always very careful to throw in there that you should talk to your doctor if you somehow have an erection lasting longer than 4 hours. That always makes me laugh. I'm sure it makes anyone watching laugh. Anyway, I thought I would go ahead and explain these drugs, partly because they're in widespread use, and partly because by explaining them, I hope to explain, what you should be doing healthfully, to fix your body over the long haul. These drugs are not very dangerous, in my opinion, and I don't care really. I'm not a big drug person, as all of you know. But you could say that the use of them to have a sexual relationship with your partner, if you've lost that due to your health, is far better than not having sex in terms of a benefit for the relationship compared to the side effect profile of these drugs. I think that's generally true for most people, but I want to review them, explain them, and then tell you what it means, and then tell you what you should be doing if you have issues. The penis itself is kind of interesting because it is its functionality is a test of your cardiovascular system, and that is because in order to have an erection, you must have an 80% surge of blood into your penis to create the erection. There is no other body tissue like that. Normally, your organs or other endpoints of circulation, your blood system, your circulatory system has to dilate anywhere from 10 to 20% to deliver blood out and about your body into organs and things that need it. Those with higher blood need have higher dilation so blood can get to them. You normally don't feel problems in the 10 to 20% range. I guess you start to if you run out of breath doing short exertion and you can't get oxygen around, you know. I mean, those are signs. But most men wouldn't think they had a cardiovascular problem when they start to get inhibition in this 10 to 20% range. But when you have one organ, the penis, that requires 80% blood flow into it, that you do notice if you can't get the blood flowing in properly. And that is reflective directly of the health of the rest of your circulatory system. Furthermore, so men with erectile dysfunction have higher risks for cardiovascular disease. And if they also have low testosterone, in conjunction with this, and they're overweight, they have very high risk for cardiovascular disease. So the bottom line of all that, of course, is that by fixing your sexual system, you are indeed fixing your overall cardiovascular system. Now, the way these drugs work, Cialis, Viagra, and Levitra, they're known as phosphodiesterase type 5 inhibitors, PDE5 inhibitor for short. Well, that doesn't mean much to most people, so let's just get down to the brass tacks of the issue. Upon sexual stimulation, your penis releases friendly nitric oxide, or ENOS. That's endothelial nitric oxide. That's the friendly form of it. That's what your whole entire circulation system needs to relax its vascular system. You must have it everywhere for a healthy cardiovascular system. So stimulation releases the nitric oxide, which helps the blood flow into your penis. The endothelial nitric oxide then stimulates the production of another compound called CGMP, cyclic guanosine monophosphate. I don't know how to pronounce that. Anyway, CGMP for short. And this compound then crosstalks back to the nitric oxide, and the two of them build up each other with the net result of a lot of friendly nitric oxide located specifically in the penis, which enables all the blood to flow into it. It also relaxes the muscles, which creates an erection. So the muscles must actually relax in order for the erection to occur along with all the blood flow. And that is how that works. Now, these drugs work on the cGMP and prevent it from breaking down, reduce it from breaking down. And that has the net effect of propping up this whole system. If your system is not too bad off, it will respond to this. And this, of course, is true whether you, quote-unquote, need it or not, which is why a lot of people use this for recreational purposes. But my point here is simply that's what's going on. It's trying to prop up this cGMP enzyme. So, you can argue that for a quick fix, that's not a bad thing. The side effects aren't terrible. Some people can get, really bad visual or hearing side effects, mostly if they already have structural or gene-related structural weaknesses, because the phosphodiesterase enzymes, this drug isn't specific only for type 5. There's type 6 and others, and if you interfere with them too much in somebody who's prone to problems, they can have eyesight or hearing problems from this. That's rare, but it does happen. Much more commonly, you get a headache or a backache, and that's because the vascular increase in nitric oxide isn't just happening at the site of the penis. It's also happening, say, at your blood-brain barrier, which lets way more blood into your head than should be getting in there, and maybe a lot of other things. So that is kind of a side effect where you may indeed have toxic waste products from your circulation entering into your brain, giving you a headache, likewise a backache. So that's kind of its downside from what the researchers say. But I would also tell you that nitric oxide being produced in mass can be a good thing from the point of view of getting an erection, but it can easily turn hostile. So there's the positive side of nitric oxide and the potentially inflammatory side of nitric oxide, which is called iNOS, or inducible nitric oxide. And that means it's induced to form by something, usually stress. So if you take this drug, and instead of sexual stimulation and pleasure, you happen to, say, get in an argument with your partner, or have some kind of stress happen, independent of that, now all of a sudden, instead of making friendly enos, you'll make unfriendly inos in very large amounts. So I would warn you to be a very nice person if you take this drug. Otherwise, you will have an excitotoxic buzzsaw going through your brain, a highly magnified stress response. The main thing I would do if somebody wanted to use this, I would take nutrients that protect your vascular system. I like our Cardio Helper product with grapeseed extract, horse chestnut, hawthorn berry, resveratrol would be a protective supplement to prevent excessive dilation that's inappropriate, as well as to also guide the production of this nitric oxide into the friendly form, because both the grapeseed extract and the resveratrol help to turn on the enzyme that contributes to making friendly nitric oxide. Now, the point of all this, of course, is to explain to you what, besides that this is a cardiovascular risk, but it indicates that you don't have enough, in general, it indicates that you don't have enough friendly nitric oxide in your system, and that you have too much inflammation, because research has now shown that inflammation takes down cGMP faster. So the drugs are propping this cGMP up by preventing it from breaking down. What breaks it down abnormally fast is stress or inflammation. Now, the specific inflammatory compound, one of them that's been shown to do this, is TNFA, which is released in response to lots of different stresses, infections, emotional stress, and especially being overweight. So what you want to do is create a program long-term for yourself where you condition your baseline amount of friendly nitric oxide to be better. Well, you do that with aerobics. Aerobics turns on genes that improve nitric oxide function. And many nutrients help this. Grapeseed extract, resveratrol, CoQ10, L-arginine, Panax ginseng, quercetin, magnesium. I mean, there are a lot of nutrients that help you. They don't work like the drugs in terms of taking them right ahead of time. Certainly, if you were to exercise before sex and take some of these nutrients, you would have more nitric oxide. And if your system wasn't too bad, it would be enough for you. But in general, you're going to have to be consistent exercising and taking these nutrients week after week to correct your underlying problem of not enough friendly nitric oxide, which is not only good for your male system, it's good for your general cardiovascular health. As you lose weight, weight or weight gain is consistently depleting your friendly nitric oxide over time. As you lose weight and boost up your nitric oxide status, you'll help correct your problem. In order to prevent the rapid deterioration of the GMP, the cGMP, you have to get rid of inflammation. So that, you know, if you're overweight, that means lose weight, but it means manage stress in your life. Sometimes acute stress will knock out your sexual system. That's because it takes cGMP apart. So any kind of stress-busting nutrient will help. The ones I just listed to help build up friendly nitric oxide all help lower TNFA, as does things like DHA and tocotrienols. I mean, there's just a lot of things that do that. But you have to have enough of a program so that you're putting the friendly stuff in and reducing the stress level so that the inflammation isn't knocking the system out. And, you know, by the time that, unfortunately, that it manifests as a significant problem, there is typically some damage to the arteries, which are small, that are going into the penis. You have small arteries going into the penis that have to dilate very rapidly, but if they start to develop plaque in them or inflammation in them or scar tissue in them, they don't work as well. So even though the mechanisms of friendly nitric oxide and how all this works, you know, the younger a person is, the more there isn't damage, and the older a person is, the more there is also this issue of vascular damage, which just makes the whole system take longer to fix naturally. So if a man should choose to use these things, I would encourage him to actually embark upon a serious cardiovascular rejuvenation program, which could take 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, or longer, depending on how much weight needs to be lost also. But it will actually save your life, add quality of years to your life, and actually fix your problem. So that's the side effect of doing this, is you get much, much healthier, not just relying on a temporary solution. Temporary solutions are fine in and of themselves for the temporary need, but they're not fine long-term for what it means to your health. You got to fix things. You really do. Now, testosterone is another issue. Testosterone underlies and is the foundation for the male system, obviously. So everything I've been telling you about friendly nitric oxide and inflammation and cGMP, if your testosterone levels are low, those issues will be more problematic. And if your testosterone levels are normal, they'll work better, period. Now, testosterone does tend to decline with age. Not that that's normal, but it does. And so what we have to do, of course, is fix testosterone. Well, the number one thing that depresses testosterone as you're getting older is weight gain, because when you're gaining weight or stuck at a higher weight level, you have more leptin in your blood. Leptin and testosterone are synergistic opposites. So when your leptin level goes too high, your testosterone level is forced too low as a trend and a pattern. So obesity, of course, or being overweight, even a few pounds for some men, is enough, partly because it depresses testosterone and partly because it generates TNFA inflammation, which knocks out the erection. So it's a double whammy against you. So you want to get on a program where you're losing weight. You don't have to lose all of your weight to get a healthy response sexually, but you have to be in that kind of a trend in order to do that. Nutrients like ginseng, acetyl L-carnitine, saw palmetto, especially if you have a BPH, very helpful. They've been proven to help normalize testosterone levels and sexual performance. I like to stay away from nutrients like yohimbine, which is a stimulant and can drive up blood pressure. I don't think that's safe to use. You'll see that in some of the male formulas. I like the Mura Puama and the a Brazilian tonic, sexual tonic. You know, I think that's good. The Tribulus Teresis, that's an Ayurvedic sexual tonic. These things never boost testosterone abnormally. They do have a rejuvenating effect and have been shown to help a tired male system re-energize itself when used over time. So those along with the ginseng are probably the best natural remedies to gradually rejuvenate a struggling male testosterone system, help it build back up. But you got to lose weight if you're overweight at the same time. Now, testosterone as a prescription item can be used, but you know it can be very problematic if a person's in problematic health. Meaning that if your testosterone is low, so you take testosterone to boost it up. Well, if you got a lot of problems going on, you could easily give yourself prostate cancer. Well, why would you want to do that? You know, the testosterone malfunctions just like estrogen malfunctions when there is hormonal confusion. That's when it goes wrong. Testosterone causes cancer in men who supposedly have lower levels. Well, then why isn't it causing cancer in young men who have way higher levels? Well, because they're not so hormonally confused with all these other issues that are especially associated with weight gain. So that's why I would always lose weight and use nutritional rejuvenators prior to ever taking testosterone, even if testosterone is low. Now, if you're in a good weight loss pattern and you've tried some of the rejuvenators at the doses I've suggested over a period of months, literally, most of the time, especially if you've been building up your nitric oxide, you won't need any testosterone. But if you should need some and you have a lot of your health going in the right direction, then I think a low dose of it, you find the lowest dose that might help you, is safe. You don't use doses that make blood levels look amazing like you're 20 because you don't know where that's going. You want a functional response, which is, better drive, better function. And sometimes some replacement testosterone may be of use. And I would use it sparingly, if at all. I would do strength training to help build testosterone. I think that helps as well. Even just, regular sex helps build testosterone. So that's, kind of builds on itself, you might say. These issues affect a lot of men. And so I thought I'd discuss them with my podcast audience here and give you my take on it. I'm a big believer, of course, in the natural strategies to boost healthy function. Not performing sexually well is not a good sign for your cardiovascular health. It's an early warning sign. It means you need to get busy. It's a red flag. It means work on things. There's a lot of natural strategies that can help rejuvenate your system over time. And that is your long-term solution. That's what you want to do. Doing it is well worth it to your health and to those that you care about and who care about you so that you can be around longer. So that's Natural Supplements for Male Sexual Performance, name of the article if you want to read it. All the references are in there. Good review for you. All right, now we're going to move to your questions for the week. And let's see what we have. First one up comes from Tracy, who says, I've been researching the use of colloidal silver as a good addition to one's immune support toolbox. While reading an article you wrote on its usage, I noticed you saying use of colloidal silver product can be effective at killing target pathogens in the 40 parts per million to 60 parts per million range. I noticed that your wellness resources colloidal silver is concentrated at 250 parts per million. Should one dilute this to obtain lesser part per million, or is this a preferred concentration? I have also noticed some rhetoric elsewhere on the internet saying that one should avoid at all costs colloidal silver products that are held in suspension by proteins, which, of course, the Wellness Resources product is. Could you please address this issue also? Many, many thanks for helping to make mine and many others' lives healthier. Well, you are welcome, Tracy, and as to your questions. the use of colloidal silver got going in the nutrition industry about 15 years ago. It was actually an allergy research product that they had used called AG Silver, which brought it all back onto the market. And it was based on the notion that silver as a natural antibiotic preceded the FDA getting its authority, so it was grandfathered in and didn't need, and the FDA had no regulatory control over it in terms of banning it from the market, which is true. So that drives the FDA crazy. I located a very, very good lab that is FDA inspected, approved. In fact, when the FDA visited me, they did an in-depth analysis of my colloidal silver product and the lab that made it, and said, "Fine, this is good stuff." Well, they didn't say that, but they didn't say anything bad, and they didn't. They were in the mood for taking colloidal silver products off the market, and they couldn't find any reason to take mine off the market, so it remains on the market. Made by a lab that they actually inspect and review, and they've thoroughly reviewed the process of how it is made. Now, as to the 250 parts per million, that is the dose that I have been using for many, many, many years. And I have every confidence in it. There are much higher concentrations available on the market that you might think kill germs better. I've never seen that. I've never witnessed that. I find this dose to be very effective. Can you dilute it, or should you dilute it? You don't need to, but I do sometimes tell, I've used this product. I am so confident in this product. I've used it repeatedly with infants, with small children. I mean, why would you want to give an infant or a small child a really toxic antibiotic? So for them, I'll dilute it in some water. I mean, you can mix some colloidal in water, and you can get it into an infant's mouth with a dropper. And it's very, very effective and safe at these levels. I've used it for years. I have absolute confidence in this particular colloidal silver compound and product. Now, it is a mild silver protein. And one of your questions is, you've read on the internet that these should be avoided. I tried to find on the internet what you might have been talking about, and I found a few places that said that well, maybe they had bacteria attaching to the proteins. Well, that's very theoretical. Certainly, our product is assayed for bacteria. Never had a problem with that at all. Now, there are all kinds of companies out there making colloidal silver under who knows what conditions. They even have people, electrically charging it up in their garages, which is insane. So there's a lot of things out there. But the companies that were saying this were companies making nanoparticles of colloidal silver, primarily from what I could tell. Now, there's a lot of colloidal silvers that have come along in the last number of years that claim to be better than this, that, and the other. And I've actually tried them. For the most part, a lot of the different compounds to see if, in fact, I thought they were better, because I really like this stuff. And I've never found one that compares. I've tried them. I've tried most of them, believe it or not, just to see. I've listened to their sales pitches. I've listened to their theories. They are what they are. If they work for you, they work for you. But I like mine. I really like it. I will point out that nanoparticles of anything are potentially problematic, whether it's nanoparticles of colloidal silver or some other colloidal mineral, which are now on the market. Nanoparticles are very, very small. They tend to bypass mechanisms of cellular nutrient regulation and just go into places. So the question becomes, no one's arguing that they're absorbable. I would argue that there's a safety issue that is unproven that relates to they can go places that they shouldn't go in your body. So your body likes to regulate where things go, and nanoparticles tend to go wherever they want to go because they're so darn small they can get into anything. Well, that's being promoted as a advantage by the people selling these things, but I would caution people against nanoparticles of anything. Because at this point, there's so little actual clinical science on these things in terms of what they do in the human body, or are they problematic anywhere? And they clearly can go places that they shouldn't, or that the body might not want them. So I don't know what that means. I don't know how anybody knows what that means. And to me, that means I have no clue if that's safe or not. So why would I do it? I wouldn't myself. So that's what I have to say about colloidal silver. I think everybody should have a bottle of it in their cupboard, because if you get a sore throat and you take it, and within a minute or two of, or within an hour of that sore throat setting in on you, a lot of times one or two doses, and it's gone. I mean, gone. I mean, you can't even believe it. I've never seen anything like it. It is the, it doesn't do that for everyone all the time, but it does it so often that it is just utterly unbelievable. Okay, Susan wants to know, how do I stop getting canker sores? Well, canker sores are herpes strain of virus. They come out when you're worn down. So you manage stress better. You take enough nutrients to fight stress. You get enough sleep at night. You don't get worn down. Anything that helps you combat stress, B vitamins, anything, will help you have the energy to keep your viruses in check. Now, the herpes strain of virus, you don't really ever get rid of it once you start having these problems. It just goes dormant and is in a subclinical, truly subclinical state where your immune system keeps it in check and it doesn't have to bother you. But under the favorable circumstances, like you're sick with something else, you're stressed, you're worn down, you aren't sleeping enough, you're eating a bunch of junk and crap, and your body's energy system's in a funk, they'll come out. Dietarily, if you eat a lot of peanut butter, which is high in arginine, you might suppress your lysine levels. Lysine, as an amino acid, helps canker sores somewhat. And high arginine, I have seen the situations of peanut butter eaters having canker sores. I don't know if you're doing that or not. The best nutrient to prevent them directly is monolaurin, the little lauric acid tablets. They are phenomenal at killing the herpes strain of virus. And if you're under high stress, for example, you can take them regularly, or you can take a small amount of them, and they are very, very good. They're little pellets, like 50 of them. It makes like a half a teaspoon, and that's 53 times a day is like a treatment level to get rid of a virus. But you might find that 10 or 15 of them a day prevents you from getting it. That is my favorite one. We also have a licorice gel that you can put on them that is phenomenal at getting rid of them. Licorice is a good antiviral. So those aren't products I make. We have them at our office. If you're interested, you can always give us a call. Jackie says, I have a friend who has developed ringing in the ears. She did not expose herself to loud music and hates using the cell phone because of the potential radiation. It came on suddenly, she said, and remains a puzzle to her because she is doing so many things in a healthy and conscious manner. What could you recommend to fix this? She does not believe in mainstream doctors for reasons such as this. Well, for whatever reason, there are multiple causes for tinnitus or ringing in the ears. You have a very small capillary blood supply going to the ears, so that can be a problem. I like grapeseed extract for that. You can have mercury toxicity issues, which can influence the tiny nerves going to the ear. I like R-alpha-lipoic acid for that, and also chlorella in your gut to bind it up, so the lipoic acid will pull it out of the nerves, and as it goes through the liver and gallbladder, the chlorella will bind it. I have seen both of those supplement recommendations help tinnitus. They're for two different reasons. You can have a congested lymph system where pressure is now moving back from the lymphatics and preventing the ears from draining, and that's pushing pressure back on the ears and causing them to ring. That often goes along with ear popping and fullness. So that's three reasons that directly relate to the ear itself. And then we have the fourth reason, which I've written a few articles on, which fascinates me, which is on the subject of the thalamus gland in the brain, which sits right behind the hypothalamus and is coordinating physical perception. And clearly, the thalamus gland itself creates noise that is then heard in the ears based on a subconscious misperception of environment. This would usually come about from high stress, acute stress, some kind of demand, something like that, stressful history. But it is clearly a problem in the subconscious brain that is creating noise that is then heard by the ears as ringing. That's been proven. So you'd have to do brain rejuvenation strategies, build up your brain-derived neurotropic factor, nutrients like pantothene, acetyl L-carnitine. There's many nutrients. So if your friend Googles the tinnitus issue on my website, you'll find my articles I've written on it, as well as if you Google BDNF or search BDNF on my website. You know, you can search my website. You can use our search engine. You can also use Google. You just type in the phrase that you want to find and then type wellness resources in parentheses in the search, and Google does a great job of searching our website for things. Our search engine is very good as well. But, you know, that's something to, I mean, it's fascinating, this whole thing about the subconscious brain causing ear ringing. All right, what do we got here? Kim says, my sister was just diagnosed with breast cancer, and they also found another spot in her armpit. I have been taking several of your products for my own health issues and feel very confident they are excellent in helping me feel best, my best. My question is, what would be best for her to start taking to get as healthy as possible before she starts chemo and radiation? She hasn't been taking anything at all. Well, the Preventer Plus, which has indole-3-carbinol and diadolomethane, is a must, 2 capsules per day minimum. Repair Plus is ideal. 3 to 6 capsules a day that has the curcumin in it, that has quercetin in it, has bromelain in it, all powerful nutrients for her situation, not only for the cancer issue itself, but also to prevent damage from radiation. Very, very effective. Nothing worse than getting radiated and ending up with a lot of scar tissue, which is typical. But anyway, that's very good. Tocotrienol E, daily super E, highly recommended. Green tea, highly recommended. Antioxidants in general, such as Daily Protector, highly recommended. Super Immune Booster to raise up the immune system, highly recommended. Ubiquinol Q10. Our Ubiquinol Q10 or our Super CoQ10 has 250 milligrams of limonene oil in it, which is another emerging breast cancer nutrient. So there's a lot of things she can do. All of those things can be taken no matter what the doctors are doing. All of them help treatments work better. I write extensively about breast cancer on my website. So, again, search the website for breast cancer and the various nutrients I've mentioned to you. There's a lot of data on there. You know, it's a shame that a lot of women, and this is your sister, but it's a shame that a lot of women won't even look at these options. Because I'll tell you something right now. I mean, your sister has metastasizing breast cancer. You know, they're going to run her through as many treatments as they can, and I'm not saying not to. But, you know, whether or not those treatments work, I mean, you've got, when they pump chemo drugs into resistant breast cancer, what's happening to the breast cancer is that it's pumping the drugs out of it as fast as the drugs are going in. And the drugs are still affecting healthy cells, so the breast cancer doesn't get knocked down and the healthy cells are getting killed. And sooner or later, a person can't take that anymore. Well, these nutrients like curcumin and tocotrienol E and green tea, I mean, they will, and quercetin, they will go into the breast cancer cells and turn off the genes that make them resistant to the drugs. Now, why can't oncologists figure this out? I mean, MD Anderson Cancer Center is saying it. I mean, yet these bird brains half the time, I shouldn't get upset with them, but, you know, because not all of them are obviously bird brains. Obviously, they're not bird brains in what they're good at, but in terms of understanding nutrition, they are. So they'll sit and tell women not to take any antioxidants because it might interfere with the drugs, which is just rubbish. You know, and they don't even understand that most of these nutrients that are being researched out there, they don't even understand the research going on. There are tons of nutrients that help prevent breast cancer and help breast cancer treatment. And they are extremely compatible with the medical treatments, and they make them work much better, much better. All right. I got a little riled up there, but can't help it. Lives are at stake. You know, I'll never forget, I had this one patient. This was about 10 years ago. And, you know, she had really bad cancer. And she took a ton of vitamins and did her cancer treatments. And she would get it into remission. And then after 3 or 4 months, it would come back. And then, you know, we'd boost up her vitamins again, and she'd go through her treatments again, and it would go away. And this went on, unfortunately, three or four times. So then, this is back when this data about, oh, you know, don't take antioxidants, it will make the drugs not really work as well. Well, this person was in a serious situation. She was lucky to be alive. And as far as I'm concerned, I was keeping her alive. So she goes to her oncologist, and the guy says, because you just got this study that said antioxidants might interfere with this treatment. She said, well, you know, the reason this has been recurring on you is because you're taking all these antioxidants. So this time, we're not going to have you take any antioxidants. In fact, I'm insisting you don't take any antioxidants. She was dead in 2 weeks. That really pissed me off. And I couldn't stand this recommendation ever since. So that's why that happens. That's why I feel that way about it. Now you know the rest of the story. All right, Lynn says, I'm 61 years old, 5'6", and weigh 126 pounds. I walk for an hour 5 days a week and have been following your leptin plan for over 5 years. I am slender but recently developed belly fat and feel bloated most of the time. What can I do? Well, Lynn, sometimes it's belly fat and sometimes it's actual lymphatic bloating underneath your abdominal region, which is showing up as belly fat or fluid retention in your white adipose tissue. So I like chlorella, high dose, maybe 12 a day, will help knock it down, get rid of the toxins, helps weight loss anyway. But a lot of times that's kind of toxic, sluggish fat, if it is fat at all. But the chlorella will also help your lymphatics. Immune Plus helps the lymphatics. Oregano oil helps clear sludge out of that area. That's what I'd work with. Diane says, my husband is 50 and rarely eats fruit. When I encourage him to do so, it can give him diarrhea. I know another man, 23 years old, who never eats salad as it runs right through him and has done so ever since he was a child. Can you explain why this happens and what they can do so they can eat these extremely healthy foods? Well, in the case of your husband, eating fruit, well, you got two issues. You've got the acids of the fruit and you've got the sugar of the fruit and maybe the fiber of the fruit, but if he can eat other fibers, then that's not the issue. And if he can eat other sugars without having this happen, then that's probably not the issue either. So sugar can cause this problem, and even fruit sugar, simply because it can fuel an imbalanced bacterial situation. A lot of times it's the malic acid or the citric acid that's in the fruit itself, which is triggering the diarrhea. And what that tends to indicate is that the pH of his digestive tract is a little bit off. So I would recommend to him a higher intake of supplemental fiber, such as our fiber helper, a couple heaping tablespoons a day, maybe some extra friendly flora. Try to get the pH functioning a bit better in the digestive tract, and then try some fruit with a meal and see how that goes. It may not be problematic after correcting the pH a little bit, but it tends to indicate that. And whether that is predictive of a more serious digestive problem, it would depend on whether or not, Diane, he had lots of other issues with digestion. But sometimes fruit, just because of the acids in it, does that to people, and then it can be also reflective of more significant issues. Now, your 23-year-old friend who eats salad and has it run right through him has a significant inflammatory problem in his digestive tract because he's not fiber tolerant. That means he has germ gangs in there, probably candida, probably bacterial overgrowth. He's got problems. And he needs to get on some kind of a candida program, least friendly flora. He may not be able to tolerate fiber for the very same reason. When you have a very inflamed digestive tract, the fibers in foods are like running a chalk, you know, fingernails across a chalkboard as far as your digestive tract is concerned. That's why it runs right through them. It irritates the colon. That shouldn't be happening. Why is it irritating the colon? Because those fibers and those plant components are interacting with his inflamed intestinal wall. He needs to uninflame it, quercetin, GI and muscle helper, you know, and then he should be able gradually to tolerate these things. But he has health issues. And if he's had this ever since he was a child, he obviously had antibiotics in excess when he was a child. You don't need to write me and tell me that that's the case. I'll tell you that's the case. And then he can maybe remember that that's true or not, but it is. Michael says, I've been using the Wellness Resources Daily Protein because, like all your supplements, I trust the knowledge and research that goes behind them. Well, thank you, Michael. You should. Recently, I viewed a video from Mercola, and he loudly proclaimed not to use any type of whey protein isolate, but instead only whey concentrate. Gee, I wonder what Mercola is selling. His main argument was the whey isolate is a putrid form of protein. Also, the isomers in isolate are the D form and not the L form. He states that these factors can cause significant long-term damage. Can you please respond to this argument, as I am now confused? I rely on whey protein as part of my everyday health initiative and would like to make sure I am taking the most optimum form. Well, Michael, it is difficult for me to keep up with Mercola's confusions on any one given nutritional topic. Of course, those of you who, Mercola writes some good stuff. I'm not saying he doesn't. But when it comes to selling dietary supplements, he is often confused and always promoting whatever it is he happens to sell. That's because he's kind of a neophyte in the dietary supplement industry. He hated dietary supplements until 4 years ago when his Google ad revenue plunged with the recession. And then he started selling supplements, making bizarre things, and he still makes bizarre things. But nevertheless, I can't spend my time correcting everything he says, or I'd run out of things to do. But when he's talking about something like protein, which I know quite a lot about, whey protein in particular, and he's making wild claims specifically just to sell his product, I feel that it is time to respond. At least I'll respond on my podcast. So whey concentrate, the problems with whey concentrate, regardless of its dairy quality, which varies all over the map, is that it has lactose in it. A lot of people are lactose intolerant, and it also has cholesterol in it, which, is fairly undesirable to be taking cholesterol in any kind of higher milligram. We get enough dietary cholesterol from just eating other foods. So, in my experience, and I've tried many whey concentrate products over the years because I've been interested in this subject for 30 years. So every time I've tried whey protein concentrates myself, I don't like them. They're too sweet tasting. They don't do energetically what other whey proteins do, and they tend to give gas and bloating way more often than other proteins. So I personally am not a big fan of whey concentrates. There are better ones than others. I'm not questioning, especially the price he's charging, that he's trying to find a raw material that's decent for whey concentrate, but I just don't like whey concentrates as my preferred source. Now, you say his argument is that whey isolate is a putrid form of protein and that it is in the D form and not the L form. Well, now he has demonstrated complete ignorance on the subject of whey protein, which that doesn't surprise me. Whey protein isolates made by ion exchange are acid washed. They can be damaged, like broken dishes going through a dishwasher. They can have D forms, some L forms still, but they are basically damaged protein molecules. There are a lot of ion exchange whey proteins out there because companies invested millions of dollars in the equipment and still make the stuff. I use low temperature processed, very high quality starting material, whey, that is run through special filters. These do not cause deforms. They leave peptides and glycomacropeptides, but the peptides intact. They are extremely high-quality protein coming out the other side of this production process, and they have zero lactose and zero cholesterol. Now, if you don't happen to know where to buy this stuff, and a lot of people that make supplements have no idea where to buy this stuff, then you don't buy it and you don't put it in your products because you can't find it, you don't know what it is, you don't know where it is, and I'm not about to tell Mercola where to buy this. But he obviously doesn't know what he's talking about. I went to his website to look at this, and he's claiming that all isolates are acid washed. I mean, it's utter nonsense. He's very confused. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And that's the truth. All right. Well, that's it for my questions from you this week. If you have questions, please email me, askbyron@wellnessresources.com. Have a happy, healthy week. See you next week.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated. Copyright 2008. All rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.